Thanks for tuning in to your Day Off Podcast, hosted by your boys, Corey and Tony.
I think by the end of today, I might have another best friend.
They're committed to making you fall in love with the hair industry, one podcast at a time.
You're going to grab a lot of information.
Yeah,
you're going to learn a lot.
Presented by Hairdistry.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is it.
Your Day Off Podcast will begin after a word from our sponsors.
Of course, I'm sitting with my best friend Tony. What's up, bud?
What's going on, homie?
Nothing, man. I'm excited about our guest today. We actually met at Premiere Orlando. Kind of in the hair world. Well, kind of important to the hair world, I would guess, but not really in the hair world.
Yeah. He definitely caters to our industry.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I'm excited to talk to him. Not only am I excited to talk to him just about what he's doing and how he's helping. Helping out the hair industry, at least aesthetically, kind of his journey of getting here, and I know at least actually I'll ask you a question because I know like on my Instagram, and it's like his company is advertised all over my Instagram. Like even I knew a lot about this company well before I met our guest today.
Yeah, and it's funny because when you finally met this guy and you know you say hey I want to do a podcast with this guy, I mean it's just. I could tell you're excited, so I had to check it out, and now I'm excited because he's done things that we've been a fan of and curious about a long time.
So now we're gonna get the answers, right?
Yeah.
Should we get in?
Let's do it.
So our guest today is Mr. Oliver Zach. Oliver is the founder of Mad Rabbit Tattoo Cream. Oliver, is that what you call it?
We're Mad Rabbit these days. It was definitely launched as Mad Rabbit Tattoo Cream, and evolved a little bit.
That's awesome. So that voice you hear again is Oliver Zach. He's with Mad Rabbit. We have so many questions. If you've ever watched Shark Tank, they were on Shark Tank. They participated in Shark Tank, and they actually got picked up by one of the sharks. So I'm also curious about that relationship and all that. So we'll get into all that, and then Oliver, listen. Oliver's in the hair business or in the hair industry to stay a little at the hair shows. But Oliver, dude, welcome to your day off.
Thank you guys for having me. I'm absolutely stoked to be here. As you mentioned, I think there's a ton of overlap with tattoos and the barber and hair world. So I'm excited to unpack that.
So Premiere was your first hair show, right?
It was, yeah.
Were you pretty surprised at how many tatted barbers and hairdressers there were?
Yeah, I was surprised for a lot of reasons. I had been to tattoo conventions, obviously, and you have some head turners in terms of people watching for sure. But the hair world has its own little subsect of head turners. It's pretty funny. There's a lot of self-expression. And I was really surprised by the amount of love and openness that we were met with, despite not being a hair product.
I don't think hairdressers care that much. You know, I think that, you know, I mean, I think our podcast kind of proves that is like, it's like, how does it bring value to the industry? And like, I kind of kidded like opening up, like, you know, you're bringing an aesthetic, which we obviously all care about. We're all in the aesthetic kind of industry, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Tons of hairdressers have tattoos, tons of clients have tattoos. So it's oftentimes common ground in the chair for conversation, I've found.
Absolutely. And you mentioned like a lot of clients have it, are you catering to salons or suites as to be able to carry the product as well?
Yeah. So our wholesale is interesting. I say wholesale, I mean fragmented channels. So that's tattoo shops, hair salons, barber shops, increasingly so permanent makeup studios. There's a variety of shelves that I think Mad Rabbit can fit on. And we're really starting to figure out how to work our way into the hair industry because, you know, the hairdresser has their client for 45 minutes to 3 hours. And like I said, tattoos are probably going to come up in conversation if they both have them. So it makes sense to sell it there for sure.
Were you surprised at how little tattoos there were? Meaning like finding people without tattoos at a hair show is damn near impossible.
Yeah, it's really hard. It's like it's a needle in a haystack for sure. It's kind of like that red car thing. Like when you buy your first red car, you start noticing how many are actually on the road. I found tattoos to be very similar for me when I got my first couple.
It was amazing. Like, I'm 54 and Tony's 54 as well. But it's amazing how, like, when I got my first tattoo when I was 18, how, like, it was like almost nobody had tattoos. You know, like I remember, like, the first time, I guess I'm so going to get murdered for this, but it's okay. I remember being like 19 and even seeing just a girl with a tattoo going like, oh my gosh, that girl has a tattoo. Not with any judgment, but just like shocked that I saw it. And now, like, obviously that's not shocking at all anymore.
That's funny, because my first tattoo, I think I was the only one in school with my tattoo. It was in middle school. I was 14.
Oh, that's hardcore.
My uncle, he was in a motorcycle gang, right? So I was at my cousin's house. They were having this biker party and everybody's lit. I mean, smoking green, getting drunk and giving jailhouse tattoos to each other. And one of the drunk guys was like, hey, y'all boys want some tattoos? Get over here. And so I'm sitting down. I think I'm 14. I'm cool. And he puts this kind of supposed to be like a Harley Davidson type bird, like the logo, and it ended up looking like kind of roadkill. And my mom had a fit, but it was so big it covered my whole arm pretty much. I'm 13, 14 years old. I got this big old roadkill tattoo.
Dude, that tattoo looked like you got hit by the windshield.
Oh my god. Yeah.
The Harley Davidson Eagle, like, hit a windshield. It was like all spread out and splattered.
That's Americana, man. That's what carried the tattoo industry for decades, is those kind of tattoos.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Oh, for sure. You know what though, like tattoos is kind of like a badge of honor. Like, if I see somebody that like has a single needle like jailhouse tattoo, I don't mess with that dude. I mean, I don't mess with any dude, let's be clear, but you know, it's kind of like the cauliflower ear, you know, it's like I ain't messing
totally
with
it.
Yeah,
they call it a gulag chic these days.
Exactly. Oh,
so,
my God.
So what prompted this idea of Mad Rabbit?
Yeah, I'm not like heavily covered in tattoos. I have like a few small fine line ones. I think I had three at the time of actually coming up with the idea of Mad Rabbit. But basically, I was really frustrated that there were no clean or vegan alternatives to petroleum jelly for tattoo healing, let alone tattoo skincare go forward. So it was kind of off that pain point that Mad Rabbit was founded as a side hustle in college with my partner, Salam. We ran it for a year before we graduated and graduated onto full-time jobs. So I say that because I don't think the expectation of success was really there. We knew we were doing really well, and we knew that we had achieved product market fit. We knew that, you know, tattooed people were finding us on Instagram and Facebook and seeing a need for our products. But it wasn't until Shark Tank and until we really started expanding our product offering that we achieved what I call brand market fit. And that's where your customer resonates with a variety of your products across the line and continually comes back as you launch new products. A lot of our success was definitely due to the Shark Tank episode airing in March of 2021. That was still when people were all locked up in COVID and on their phones and purchasing online. So in a weird way, you know, COVID was a blessing for the founding of Mad Rabbit. And I'm really thankful for that. But I'm way more excited to be operating full time now, because now we have the chance to attend in-person events like Premier Orlando. And we get to enter the hair industry and be a presence in person. So it's changed a lot since the days of it being a side hustle. But I think the message of clean and vegan tattoo care has really resonated. And we're really excited to also expand into professional facing products at this point. So really catering to the tattoo artist.
That's amazing. Hey, I got a couple questions real quick. Is the first question is, how'd you come with the name Mad Rabbit? But then follow that up with like, so right before, like, you knew that was going to, it was going to show on TV, like, were you anticipating? And then what was the response, you know, while you were, you know, for that hour that you were on?
Yeah. First question. So Mad Rabbit, I need some sort of like crazy lie that, I don't know, illustrates me getting gouged by a jackalope or something in the West. But the key to Mad Rabbit was I wanted it to be something you had to look into to figure out what it is, right? I didn't want it to be Tattoo Boost or Inkify or something corny like that. I really resonate in like brands that stand for something but mean nothing, right? So I look to Red Bull, for example. What is a Red Bull? Doesn't matter. But once you figure out it's an energy drink, that always resonates. Apple, same thing. So I wanted it to be something that kind of seems like nonsense on the surface, but actually has undertones of American-made and natural. So that's where we pulled from the jackalope, which is a mascot of American folklore, if you will, and turned him into the Mad Rabbit.
Was it always Mad Rabbit? Like from day one? Like when you did this, we're going to do Mad Rabbit?
Yeah, it was originally, I'm actually wearing the first shirt we ever made, and it says Mad Rabbit All Natural Tattoo Enhancer. So kind of like the, I don't know, like an Old West wagon offering, if you will, is what we were trying to evoke originally with the brand name. But since then, we've slimmed down to Mad Rabbit.
I like that. It's like the old fashioned, like snake oil and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I heard? Actually, this is an interesting conversation. So I read this article about snake oil, and apparently there was some medicinal stuff about snake oil. But then what happened is that the Chinese came in and they stole the IP to snake oil and started making crap stuff. So that it's actually the crap stuff that was IP stealing. Is why we call snake oil. But apparently the original snake oil that was sold was actually had medicinal properties.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that crazy? That.
Propaganda, yeah. Man. It'll get you.
It did.
So during, this will lead up to your second question. Like when you guys, so you developed this Mad Rabbit, and who had the idea and said, hey, let's apply for Shark Tank. Let's.
Yeah, that was actually my co-founder, Salam. I grew up watching Shark Tank every single Friday with my families from when I was 13 years old to when I left for college at 18. My dad's an entrepreneur. I knew that it's something I always wanted to be, but I never had the balls to get on Shark Tank, if you will, or send that application in. My co-founder, Salam, who's notorious for grammatical and spelling errors, he half-assed, in his words, an Instagram application for Shark Tank. I'm sure it was riddled with those errors I was referencing, but surprisingly, we ended up getting a call back. And I didn't trust it at first because 2 months prior, I received a voicemail from who I thought was Post Malone's manager telling me that they're excited to work together. And it was Salam pranking me. So I was like, there's no way you're going to get me again. I'm not falling for this again. But then he sent me the voicemail of the casting agent and I was like, wow, this is legit. So therein starts the pitching process. That was a process of recording and submitting probably 50 iterations of our pitch to this casting agent who, this is very atypical. This guy was dead set on getting us on. He came back with notes every single time, need more energy, need to smile more, etc. We finally got it right after, I kid you not, like 2 weeks of trying to pitch this camera. And he sent it in and we got the flights booked to Las Vegas because, again, this was during COVID. So they flew us into the bubble instead of Los Angeles. And then we were separated from each other, isolated in our rooms for 10 days. Every meal was delivered. I had a beautiful view of the Venetian pool, but I could not get in. I couldn't even go to the gym. So I had nothing to do but practice this pitch over FaceTime with Salam for 10 days straight. We get into the big ballroom. Over the intercom, you hear pitch, and then you walk down the famous Shark Tank aisle, and it is like go time. There's one chance at it. You're in there for about an hour, and it's just a grill session. But luckily for us, I think momentum really played in our favor. We knew our numbers very, very well, and we had confidence in them and our business model, and we ran into very little troublesome questions. I think everyone was really excited to have us there, which was cool.
Okay, so many questions now. Hold on. So do the producers prep you, like make sure that you have these numbers in this? Like, or yeah, go ahead. To me, here's what it looks like. And Tony and I were talking about it right before we got on air. It looks like a TED talk to me. It looks like, you know, because everyone kind of has the same pitch, everyone kind of has the same thing. And I know we have a couple friends that have done TED talks. So, you know, there's a whole procedure about this is the way that the message is delivered. Is there none of that coaching?
There's you have the parameters of what is your 90 second pitch, right? What does that look like? And that's where you get into kind of like stylistic writing. That's where I drew correlations between tattoos and masterpieces from art history, for example, that you kind of want to be illustrative and flamboyant with that pitch. And then from there, you kind of get into the questions and the Q&A and the digging in. But for that first part, I mean, my preparation for writing that with Salam looked a lot like watching the best Shark Tank pitches of all time, quite honestly. Scrub Daddy, for example, is one of the best Shark Tank episodes to ever air. He's a fantastic salesman and he crushed it. There were some things I didn't like about his intro though. So we kind of just pulled from a variety of pitches. We had the parameters of here's the amount of time you have to speak. And a lot of that was also teased out during the application process with the casting agent, getting feedback like, hey, maybe don't say this, try this instead. A lot of it's pretty hammered out by the time you're walking down the aisle.
Wow. Wow. But they don't give you like, you know, make sure you know these numbers, they're going to ask these type of questions.
No. And I think that's where a lot of people go wrong with Shark Tank. I think it's a good thing for just about every company out there, so long as you're at the point of having confidence in your numbers and your business model. And that's like a step you can't skip, in my opinion. So that wasn't necessarily guidance they provided, but that's just more of like a business relations thing, right? Like if you're pitching somebody to give you money, you better damn well know how you're going to get it back to them.
Right.
That's a good point there. That's really, and I guess the producers, they don't care if you get picked up or not. And if you stumble, that's just good TV as well, right?
No. Yeah. Producers want good TV. And that was the other thing about the casting process where I brought up like energy and flamboyancy. Like what they told us is that 110% energy looks like 70% energy on TV. So they really were kind of pushing for you to become a TV bit for better or for worse.
Yeah. Cause it's funny. Cause you see a lot of people, they'll have a great pitch, but when they start grilling them about the numbers, they were like, they kind of get lost a little bit. And all of a sudden then you get, Mr. Wonderful. He starts drilling you. And, but so when they were asking you these questions and you knew your numbers, could you tell that you started to kind of like start to hook them and they're starting to kind of like, you know,
it was very, very tense until we got our first offer, which was actually from Kevin O'Leary, Mr. Wonderful, which was a huge relief because he knows his shit and he's a business fundamentals guy. So to have his kind of buy-in off the bat, I think was a huge, it was a great thing. And soon after that's when the other offers piled on. That's when Mark followed up with his offer. Lori was about to make an offer and Mark said, it's me or you walk. And we took Mark because he's who we wanted from the beginning. But Kevin really started off a ton of momentum for us that was just continually positive throughout the episode.
Okay. You just brought up another question. So did you guys talk before Salam? Is that his name? Did you guys talk before and like, okay, like was it real talk or was it like, how dope would it be if Mark picks us up? Like, what was the real conversation? What was that conversation like, A? And then B, like, did you guys have a number? Like, okay, if they offer us this, we'll take it. If they offer us this, like, did you guys create like a battle line? Like, we're not going to cross this. We're not going to give up this much.
Yeah. So we both knew all the Sharks very well. And we also know what they're known for, right? Whether it's industry or if it's reaching out to companies that have gotten deals with each of the Sharks beforehand, we had a lot of those conversations just so we could be prepared to analyze the situation if it came up. In other words, like how could we extract the most value from Lori if she was the one who ended up giving us a deal, for example? We felt best about Mark, obviously, for the sports overlap. And really just from a PR perspective, I think he's the most prominent. Outside of that, what was the other question you asked?
Did you guys set up parameters? You were to offer like, if Mark were to offer X, but wanted this much, whatever. Ownership.
So one of the things prior to going on Shark Tank we did was we raised a friends and family round. So with that comes evaluation. It's what's called a convertible note. So it doesn't necessarily turn into equity until you raise a financing round. But we had a bottom price that we took from our friends and family that we did not want to drop below. I think we went on the show with hoping to get a $12 million valuation and we walked out with a $4.2 million valuation. So a massive, massive cut on what we were expecting. And then you pair that with the fact that you don't actually get the money until 9 months later, right? When they're deciding whether or not this should air, that valuation is very stale if you're a high growth company. So I think the way we looked at it is listen, this is going to be kind of a kick in the balls, for a lack of a better word, but it's going to be well worth it from a PR perspective and a capitalization perspective. And it absolutely was. I mean, it definitely propelled us into becoming a household name. Beyond the show, Mark has invested an additional $1 million with us. So for us, I mean, it was a fantastic thing.
Oh, you just opened up some more questions for me. So you record, right? Like, you record the episode. So then you said that they decide whether they're going to use it or not. So if they don't use it, is your deal contingent on that?
Yeah.
So it has to go through the TV show.
It has to go through the TV show. There are some cases where it doesn't. And in our case, I think Mark had the trust that if we aired, we wouldn't back out of the deal, because that has happened to the Sharks before, and it's part of the reason why they're kind of averse to not closing the deal prior to it airing. So I think he trusted us, and we therefore followed through on our side of the deal. But I've heard of a lot of cases where it is quite contingent on your airing if you accept their deal or not. I don't know the validity of that, and it certainly wasn't our case, but I think it happens.
So when you guys like done and you shook Mark's hand and 9 months goes by and you get the money and
That must have been crazy.
Okay, obviously you got 9 months of planning the future too. So, but are you meeting with Mark? Are you talking to Mark? Are you talking to his team? Are you guys kind of like, you know, creating this household brand together?
Yeah. So one of the first things after we shook his hand and got off stage, we were introduced to his point person who runs Mark Cuban Companies, which is the portfolio of all of his companies. And he would then serve as our point of contact for the next few years and still. They were initially on the board for about a year and have since rolled off because we've raised additional equity since then and brought new board members on. But I would say we definitely hear from Mark and his team mostly around investment updates, investor updates, board notes and things like that. Really, anytime big news about the company or a big decision to be made, that's kind of when I'll reach out to him. I'll say the funny thing about Mark Cuban as well, which I don't understand how he does it. There must be 11 Mark Cubans at all times, but he has never taken more than 5 minutes to respond to an email of mine. It's a bit baffling considering how many operating roles he has in so many different companies, let alone companies of his own. He's been extremely responsive and helpful the entire time.
That's amazing. Do you have a cell digit? Can you text him?
I have them. I use them very sparingly. I've only called on it once.
I get that.
Email works. So, I mean, why change it?
Yeah. No. There's no doubt. That's so good. So he's pretty hands-on then, right?
I wouldn't say hands-on. He's more of an advisor, I guess I would call it.
And so, like, will he answer questions, or does he kind of come forward and go like, hey, Oliver, have you thought about this? Or this is an angle that we can play? Or is it always like, or is the conversations more like, hey, Mark, I'm struggling here. What should I do?
I think it's a combination of things. And I think that's what probably makes a good advisor. He'll come to us with unwarranted advice or
instigator.
He'll come to us with advice that he, you know, for example, there's a chain of tattoo parlors that have exclusive right to operate on all 27 military bases in the U.S. They're called American Tattoo Society, run by Nicole and Ryan Harrell. And he emailed me one day and said, hey, this group of operators reached out to me. I think it'd be a great thing for Mad Rabbit. Here's the intro. And through that introduction, we are now selling in all of American Tattoo Societies, which allows us to cater to an awesome military audience in a way that we weren't before. He'll also come in if you're familiar with iOS 14, when that rolled out, it changed the digital marketing landscape forever. You no longer could tell that Tony was scrolling on Pinterest for 3 hours. Facebook could no longer tell that Tony was scrolling on Pinterest for 3 hours looking at his next tattoo. So therefore, I can no longer target him as accurately across apps. that was a huge moment for brands that they had to figure out what their digital marketing would look like go forward. And that's an example of where we reached out to Mark and said, hey, how can we get away from our dependence on ad spend and, you know, figure out the shift in climate? His recommendation there was for us to start up Mad Rabbit University, which is a boots on the ground college ambassador program that we've started and extracted a lot of value from over the last three semesters. So kind of how he enters the conversation can change, but he's very versatile, responsive, and wise, to be quite honest. So he's been a great partner for us from an advisor perspective.
Did you ask him about hair shows?
I did not get his opinion on hair shows. I should though.
Yeah, let us know. Let us know. I would love to know what his opinion on hair shows are.
So when you went on the Shark Tank, you had one product. Now you're expanding on, you have multiple products. Is it under with you and your partner to get together and you consult with Mark's team or how do you talk about like growing this brand to multiple products?
Mm-hmm. A lot of our innovations have actually come off the back of our community. So we have an extremely active Discord channel with 6,000 ambassadors who are live chatting at any time. We have 1 million followers across social. And what all of that does is it allows us to tap into our community and really just ask them what they want. It's been as simple as that for at least the last 3 years of product development. So, for example, a bar soap was very high on the wish list for our customer, knowing that really the only alternative to tattoo healing for bar soap is like Dove unnatural unscented bar soap. So we look to iterate on that, create an aloe vera based version and come up with a better one for tattoo healing. What our process kind of looks like is those ideas are often sourced from the community. We then run the idea by our pro team, which as of now it's 11 of, in my opinion, the best tattoo artists in the United States, who have incredible followings and respect in their own right in their own industry. We run the idea by them. If approved or they're excited about it, we then move on to product formulation with our chemist. And lastly, the final kind of sign off that we get on all of our products prior to launching is we have an awesome tattooed dermatologist on our advisory board. So he's a skin cancer surgeon by day, tattoo collector by night, and he serves as an awesome voice of science on all of our products. So that's kind of how we iterate and expand.
That's pretty cool. I have a request. I love the body wash that you guys have. I kind of wish it had like a vanilla tobacco kind of like a like fragrance to it. Like
you've gotten that feedback a ton that it's probably leans a little more feminine, which is kind of interesting because it's a masculine looking bottle.
To me, it's just neutral. Right. It's just like kind of a neutral smell as far if we're putting gender on it. But I would love like this like masculine kind of like smell.
Pine tar and wood and tire.
like we've been in the woods all weekend.
But neutral, yeah. You can hit everybody unless you're going to do unless you're going to come out with multiple fragrances.
That's it, man. It just has another skew. It's all good, man. It's all good. Do you guys have a SKU number that as far as how many products you guys want, or do you just want to keep expanding?
I don't want too many. I want them all to be driven from a point of intention. And another thing I don't like doing is just copying products that are out there. So I think there's a lot of innovation to be done in this space and improvement. So that's kind of how I'll take it is, you know, if we can add value to this existing alternative, then we'll probably create a product for it. So I don't have any sort of goal. I would say on a consumer facing front, we just launched into patch technology, which is really exciting. So we're the first to market hydrogel patch technology that you put on a new tattoo and it aids the healing process astronomically. So I definitely want to get you guys some if you're planning to get some more tattoos, but that's an example.
But I'll get one now. If you send me the stuff, I'll go get one.
Yeah, it's cool, man. We're producing them out of South Korea, which is one of the world's most leading and foremost skin mask labs, which is really exciting. And like I said, we're just trying to add value and help the tattoo consumer in little ways, right? So if that means cutting down your healing time from 3.5 weeks to 2 weeks, that's a big deal to me.
Huge.
The kind of untapped opportunity that remains for us, I think, is continually on the professional side. We launched our first pro product in February, which is a tattoo glide. For those of you who don't know, it's basically like a smear that the artist rubs in over the tattooing area so that the needle doesn't snag the skin as it's being dragged across. Every tattoo artist uses it in every product. We created the first vegan and natural version for that. So I think there's a lot of opportunity to help really the artist side of the business now, which is really exciting. But yeah, there's no number on SKUs. We'll keep going.
Hey, Oliver, so you were talking about the patch. Is that like I've used tattoo derm before, which is like that, like that plastic. It keeps the tattoo. By the way, I'm a huge fan of these products. You've used them too, right? The tattoo derms?
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that it goes on. I love that first off, after one day, it's the ugliest thing you've ever seen. But then you take it off, you wash it, and then you put another one on there. And then literally like 3 days later, like I felt healed and almost with no pain. There wasn't like the hardest part about getting certainly big tattoos is just keeping them clean, especially in the hairdressing space. You know, in the hairdressing space, it's so hard to keep them clean because there's hair, there's products, there's everything in the air all the time. It definitely changed my tattoo ability, I guess, not ability, but you know, to have that patch on there, because I just felt clean. I didn't feel like it was going crazy, and that I had to like lube it up every couple hours. So is it a similar product to that?
It's similar. So the big difference is, first of all, I totally agree with you. It's a fantastic product. The most important thing about what it does is it basically skips the scabbing process. And scabs are great if you fall off your bike and scrape your knee, because your body obviously wants a barrier to dirt and bacteria entering the skin. That's why you put petroleum jelly or Neosporin on it, because it encourages scab growth. What's great about those second skin products that you're talking about, as well as our soothing gel and our repair patch, is it really helps skip the scabbing process, and it skips to more of a flake, which you don't get any of the ink loss when your scabs fall off. Those second skin products, whether it's Saniderm or Derm Shield, again, I love them. They work great for me. The biggest complaint about them is that a lot of people are allergic to the adhesive. So when you are too, yeah, it's very, very common. So when you peel that off, you have like a square patch for a few weeks from the reaction. So we're iterating on that. I want to find a solution that can really replace that, because I think it is a great product and it's a great way to heal your tattoos. But where our soothing patch is different is, instead of leaving it on for up to 3 days, you're really only leaving these on for 8 hours. And then you can, whatever, wash your body, let your skin breathe for an hour, and then you can throw another one on before you sleep. So they're a lot more interchangeable. There's no adhesive. It's actually a hydrogel matrix. So what happens is all of the ink and plasma that's seeping out of your tattoo is absorbed into the hydrogel matrix, and it bonds that way. And the way you get it off is you saturate it with warm water, which allows the cells to swell, which then releases your skin. So you don't actually have any adhesive per se on your skin. The other benefit that our patch provides that those second skins do not is it's UV resistant up to 98%. So you can actually go in the sun with these, which is a huge pain point right now in the summer as people are continuing to get, you know, tattoos and show them off.
That's a conversation.
Go ahead. I was gonna say, because my daughter, she got a few tattoos in the fall because she wanted to be out in the sun.
There's two things during the summer. It's like, it's, you can't expose, you know, for the first 7 days, you can't expose it to salt water, and you can't expose it to like pool water and the sun, right? So those three variables, it doesn't even make sense. The tattoo guys are gonna kill me, but it doesn't even make sense to get it in the summer unless you have a better solution for it. Are you guys planning on coming out? You have the glide, which is used. Are you guys planning on, or are you working on a replacement for, not replacement, but we'll call it a replacement for like green soap?
We actually got a ton of feedback specifically at the Premier Orlando convention from tattoo artists who came up to the booth and asked for that very product to be replaced. I've heard it's very effective, but it has some serious downsides. So that, for example, is a perfect candidate for something we'd love to iterate on. We haven't started yet, but, it's that kind of opportunity where the artist really likes the form factor and the solution it provides, but maybe has a lot of, you know, side effects that are unliked. So, that's a great example of a product that we would consider innovating on.
It's green soap is alcohol based, so you know, it always feels good on an open wound.
Right.
You know,
spicy.
Yeah,
exactly. But you know, there's also something to be said. Like, green soap does smell like tattoos. Like, I can't, like, every time I smell green soap, I go, oh, that just kind of reminds me of that whole tattoo experience as well. So, you know, if I don't know if fragrance or whatever, but maybe you should have it the same smell, because that adds to the that's the time not to use the vanilla tobacco.
Yeah, right. You
know, that's the fresh smell of green soap. No, that's, I bought some green soap after my tattoo and I used it. It hurt like hell.
So I'm curious now that since you're entering the hair industry, the hair world, and whose idea was to come to Premiere?
So that was actually a woman we worked with named Mark. She was consulting for us, and she basically opened up the opportunity and said, hey, listen, I know this world like the back of my hand. There's a ton of interest here from barbers and salon owners, and there might even be a distribution opportunity. So that's what kind of got us in the door at Premiere, was that sort of interest.
Are you looking for a distribution opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely open to it. I think a really important thing for Mad Rabbit is for us to control the education and the way that the brand is displayed, because our products take so much education. There hasn't been a way to take care of your tattoo outside of petroleum jelly for the last 10,000 years. So, like, we literally just need to control how our brand is represented on the shelf. So that's, like, kind of my one aversion to distributors. But at the same time, it also gets you in a ton of doors very fast. So there's pros and cons to it.
You know what's interesting to me, and it's interesting because the entire industry is moving that way, and both Salon Centric and Cosmoprof, the biggest distributors in our world, is they're now doing both of them have direct to consumer sales. So like, we can send a link out, like, if Mad Rabbit was in, like, let's say Cosmoprof, we can send a link out to our clients and say, hey, did you because we talk about tattoos, hey, make sure that you pick up this stuff, and you can go directly to them, as opposed, because I don't know, like, I don't have enough clients, I don't have enough conversation where I'd want to carry it on my shelves necessarily, like, in the salon. But if I had the ability to go direct to consumer, and then, like, you know, Oliver cuts me a little check at the end for doing that, like, that's much more convenient to me than anything. And like I said, like, Cosmoprof and Salon Centric now allows that to happen. So that's
like, kind of like affiliate marketing.
It's like affiliate marketing, but you can, like, if you set up an account with Cosmoprof, you can now, you know, you can just send that link to your client, and they can go directly to the directly from the distributor. That way it never passes through us.
Yeah.
You know? The other benefit of that is you don't need to shell out money up front to stock your shelves, right? It's, yeah.
And that's the deal. I mean, especially Tony and I, we're in a suite, you know, we only have so much shelf space, and, like, a lot of, I don't know how much you know about the hair industry, but a lot of the hair product companies, like, you have to bring in the whole line. Well, you know, because, you know, we have limited shelf space, and, like, we don't want to shell out $3,000 for a line, you know, the market's changing a little bit, you know, as far as, like, where our capital is. And like, if we bring in a full line, we'll never make profit off the shelves, just because it's just too expensive to bring up and too expensive to upkeep.
How big is product sales for you? What percentage of your business would you say is reliant on product sales?
Mm-hmm. I mean, if I'm being honest, not much. It's not something that I'm really starting to get back into it, because there's direct to consumer, but I'm not interested in filling my shelves with it anymore. You know, the one thing that I realized over COVID was, in those days is that the product companies, they made us the end consumer, meaning they made the hairstylist the end consumer, and they could care less whether I sold it to my client or not. And then what happened over COVID is that they all set up, like, these direct to consumer things. And that's kind of when I realized, like, oh, we were their end market, not our clients. Right. So then, I don't know why I went on that tangent. Probably because I do every time I get the opportunity.
Deep seated.
Yeah. Oh, you know, it definitely is. But yeah, so, like, I want my customer to be the end user, and not me the end user, the end buyer, certainly.
But I mean,
sure.
But it depends on who you ask that question, right? So we left a company.
Well, he asked me.
No, I know, but I'm saying, we left a company that had 15 salons, and they probably averaged 15 to 20%. You know, it's huge, and So it all depends. And so, you know, there's people out there that they're all about the retail, and then you got other people are more or less just all about the service, the hair, and leave it up to the client to purchase the retail. So it varies.
Yeah. As an industry. Yeah. Certainly.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, some people are up to like 50%, right? I mean, like 50%.
Wow.
Yeah. It's crazy. You know, it's a crazy, especially it's a crazy number to me. Not with any judgment, but it's a crazy number to me because the hair services are getting more and more expensive. You know, the average ticket for hair services, I mean, just over the last 5 years, has probably doubled. You know, one, it has to, because, you know, products are certainly very expensive for us to bring in now, way more expensive than they were, you know, 2020, beginning of 2020. You know, prices just are, I guess, with supply chain issues and all that kind of stuff, prices are going. And I think the ability and the opportunity for companies to charge more, you know, that does that too. You know, do you get your stuff from, well, you said South Korea, you're getting your patches from, are the products from there as well?
Everything is made in the United States outside of that patch technology.
That's cool. And isn't there like a company in Minneapolis or something that does a bunch of the manufacturing? Are you guys using those guys?
No, that's not us. We're based out of Los Angeles.
Oh yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. So your headquarters is moving to Los Angeles. First off, where's your headquarters, you know, now, and it's moving to LA?
As of right now, it's my parents' garage in Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh yes.
We are upgrading to our first office space ever, which is going to be an arts district downtown LA. The vision for it is it's going to be 4 or 5 tattoo beds, heavily content enabled. So basically, I want it to be turnkey ready for all of our artists to grow their platform with video, podcast, audio, whatever they want to get into. I want to have all of those assets ready to go. They can grow their platforms, and it's powered by Mad Rabbit. So really empowering the artists to grow their community. We obviously get a ton of awesome content as a result. And content's the key to Mad Rabbit, right? That's our engine that keeps our ads going. That's what provides us content for our social media. Content is very much the core of our business. And for the last 4 or 5 years, we've done it all out of a studio apartment in Los Angeles. So really excited to have some new digs and a bigger team, quite honestly.
Is there going to be like, you talked about like the beds there. So will there be like a vent space kind of like incorporated in there?
Yeah, that's the goal. I think we're going to do some brand collaboration events, throw some parties. We obviously want to be the cool brand and want to bring people into the space, especially as we launch it. So that's kind of the goal. It's definitely going to be a party friendly space.
I love that, man. I love that idea. You know, you, I'll give you off air. I'll give you a couple of hairdressers that you might want to team up with.
Awesome. Yeah. That'd be sweet.
If you did, you know, not just tattoo artists, but even like if you had hairdressers out there, like promoting the product or, you know, talking about it, I'll give you a couple of names and they're, one that I'm thinking of in particular is LA based. So it might be a good relationship to have, and as a trusted voice in the industry as well.
You know? Cool. Let's connect on it.
Yeah, yeah, let's definitely do that. Dude, so what's next? So when's the patch coming out? Because I might go get a tattoo now.
Patch came out 2 weeks ago. I'll make sure to send you some. Oh, we're good to go. We are live. I got my first real American traditional tattoo. It's like this big. It's a Black Panther, so it's huge. And the reason I got that is I just wanted the biggest, boldest tattoo possible to test these patches myself. And I was blown away with it. So I'm excited for you to try it.
Dude, I'm so excited. Where can people find the patch or find all the patches?
Yeah, you can find us on madrabbit.com. We're just about at madrabbit on everything at this point. And I'm Oliver Zach on everything. So happy to connect with anyone in the industry, any aspiring business founders, and anything in between. But thank you guys so much for having me.
Oliver, of course, dude. Thank you, man.
Big fans, brother.
Yeah. For real. And like, I've been using the Mad Rabbit. You gave me some at Premiere and I love it, dude. I love it. So actually, Alex, who we work with,
he loves it so much he didn't share.
I don't have it. Give me one, man. What do you want me to do? We gonna share a pomade? Fuck. You know?
But share.
Don't stop. So but Alex, her husband, Brian, reached out to me and he's like, I need some of this Mad Rabbit stuff. So I gave him the website. So I hope that Brian picks some up. But that's it, dude, I love it, man. I really, really and truly, I'm wearing it now and it feels so good. It feels
Thank
so
you.
It is so good. That's not awesome. Yours is all dry and flaky, dude. You should have been in Iceland, Dick. You should have been in Orlando.
Never thought you'd hear that.
Right.
Exactly. That's so crazy. What? I had a question about the patch again. Oh, does it come on a roll? How does it come out?
No, it's packaged in a resealables, basically Ziploc thing with three patches in it. So I went through like three packs, which would be nine patches through my healing. One should get you just as far, but I really wanted to test them. So
that's cool. Hey, I actually, before I kick you off, let's go through the product. So you have like what we see all over Instagram, at least, is the numbing cream. And then have there been numbing creams out there before, or were you guys kind of the first to the marketplace?
No, there's we're like the first on label solution for tattoo numbing cream. People have always used lidocaine for this, you know, unmarked, if you will. But we're like the first tattoo branded numbing cream. That's kind of where a lot of the product journey starts for a new consumer, especially ones who don't have any tattoos yet, because a lot of times what keeps people from getting tattoos are A, the permanence, or B, the pain. And we can only solve one of those issues, right? So what we find is that a lot of times a numbing cream purchaser is a first-time tattoo getter. They walk out of the salon with a repair patch on. They'll use those for the first 3 days of their tattoo healing. They'll then graduate to the soothing gel, which is, that's actually our most viral product. It's that little aloe vera based jelly that tattoo artists swipe on new tattoos. That is key for the next 2 to 3 weeks. Again, you really don't want your tattoo to get to the scabbing phase, because that's where ink loss starts to happen. So keeping moisturized with the soothing gel. And then that's when you graduate into our unscented lotions and more daily use products like our balm. And then lastly, once you're all healed a month later, that's when I would recommend things like the body wash, the exfoliating soap, that kind of realm. So that's what like the full product life cycle looks like, I would say.
That's pretty cool. It's not inclusive. It's like exclusive, or not, you know, big. It's like, it takes care of every bit of your tattoo journey.
Awesome. Journey. Yeah. Can you buy a kit? Can you buy it? Do you have a?
Yeah, bundles have become really big for us, which again gets back to like the concept of going beyond product market fit and into brand market fit. There's been so much larger appetite for buying all the products at once. So that's something we're working on, creating like really nice exclusive boxes for, or little DOP kits, for example. The consumer definitely wants it, so we're working on it.
Well, I'll tell you, you gave me an overnight bag that I switched over, and I've been using it, and I absolutely I love the overnight bag, dude. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
And they're washable too. You can just throw it in the washer. It's a great little.
Oh, that's perfect. Gig. That's perfect. Yeah. Because you know, whenever you have one of those things, your shampoo bottle opens up in it, and you're like, oh yeah, not every time, right? That's cool, Oliver, brother. Again, thanks for hanging out. You know, thanks for hanging out with me in Orlando, and made me feel like a special guy there. We I brought Oliver up to our studio, and we sat and chatted for a little bit. It was cool. And you know, dude, honestly, please reach out if you're going to be at any hair shows. I mean, I would love to hang out. Let's go do dinner or go hang out or something. You know, we'd love to hang with you.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's run a podcast live next time. Hopefully from Mad Rabbit HQ.
Let's do it.
We are down. We are down.
Cool. We'll get you boys tatted.
Yeah.
We are definitely down. Mr. Oliver Zach, thank you for hanging out with us, and thank you for joining us on Your Day Off.
Awesome. Thank you, gentlemen. Take care.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, share it with friends, give us a rating, and drop a review. To listen to all the latest podcasts, please subscribe from your favorite podcast outlet. And to stay connected on and off the show, you can follow us at Hairdistry on Instagram and all other social media platforms. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time. Peace and love.